Place to Be Nation, welcome to BTB NXT. We haven't been on here in a while. We have a bit of a more extended gap than we normally have, but we will chalk that up to tropical weather, throat infections, an election, Halloween, various bouts of priapism, both male and female, general ennui, and among other things. But we are back again, and believe it or not, I don't know if my my co-hosts have realized, but this is episode 10. We've made it to episode 10 of BTB NXT. So without further ado, let me bring in my my co-hosts, Timifer, or wait, Jimifer, I guess we should say, or whatever you would call it, Tim Capel and Jimifer Smith. Episodes, we have made it this long, both in the podcast and in our in the IRL. I just said IRL, which would be in real life. Anyway,
do a sterling start. We can't win them all. It's only an anniversary edition. I'm just glad that all of our listeners, hypothetical and otherwise, are still with us after 10 glorious episodes. Thank you. And if this is your first, well, here's the show.
I'm sorry. Jake got me with that. Just can't. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm better now. That was amazing.
We'll edit that out.
Nah. Sorry.
Anyway, so I think after that roaring intro, we can hop into our developmental names, as is the tradition here on PTB NXT. So right. I'm doing these on the spot. I do not know what they're going to be. All I do is I go to creative, ask them what our new gimmicks are going to be, and then I spit them out. Tim, would you like to remind us of our previous ones before we get new monikers?
Yes. So I will tell the listeners the current gimmicks that we are going to be retiring now. So, Jake, you are currently known as Howie Simpson. Sounds like a great Canadian manager. I myself am Ricardo Bennett. I'm probably a personal ring announcer for someone. And Jenny, you know, you always seem to do well here with the gimmicks. You are Trunk Mitchell.
Oh, Trunk. That's true.
Yeah.
Trunk. Seems similar to Cheeks, I would say. I think we decided on a very Cheeks-esque gimmick.
I would argue that my names have been weak until Trunk, maybe. That's
better than Howie Simpson. So.
They've been colorful.
Yeah.
At least you're not named after like a lower tier pizza chain, like Howie.
Hungry Howie's. Oh wow, that's a. I don't have those near me. Is that kind of a regional thing?
We have them for sure.
Yeah. Is it good?
You know, it hits a certain spot. You know, I have a fondness for it because in high school, my boyfriend, now husband, lived like 5 minutes from Hungry Howie's, and we would just get fucking stoned and just order copious amounts of
Hungry Howie's.
So, I mean, it's not good pizza at all, but like I just have this nostalgia fun.
Is it like Little Caesars energy, sort of?
No, I feel like Little Caesars is better.
Yeah, I think it's like in the CC's tier.
CC's energy?
CC's tier, yeah. I would put that there, yes.
Yikes.
So, but anyway, we'll carry on into our names. So I think what's customary is I go first. So I have one pulled up now. My new gimmick is going to be Wit Pantsuit. as JR would say, Whit Pantsuit.
Uh-huh.
So, okay.
Pantsuit seems a little
I don't like
unbelievable
that.
As a last name, but
it does.
Definitely not going anywhere. Definitely gonna be a local talent with that name. Yep. So.
That's up there with Mortimer Plumtree.
Another turkey.
So This next one, I think I'm going to give to Jenny because it could be a female name. I don't know if it's intended to be, but is it? It is at least a unisex name. So we will give her Caden Fisher.
Caden Fisher with Caden. A C or a K?
C-A-D-Y-N.
Oh, Fisher. Y-N.
Oh, that does sound feminine.
Yeah, okay.
Caden Fisher.
I could see Caden Fisher being, like, hot on the indie scene, like, right now. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, totally.
Kind of like a big girl, right? Like, like a Naya.
Caden could be a... Well, I don't know. Caden's kind of a... Female Caden is definitely a stripper name, right?
Oh, okay. Right.
So, maybe you have more of a stripper build. Excuse me, dancer build. But you bring the work rate, too.
And the last name, Fisher, obviously you have to go the fisherman gimmick there as well. So.
Yeah, you got to use a fisherman buster for your finisher.
Right. So that would be, yeah.
It's a good work rate.
I like it.
Indy's finisher. So, all right. Finally, Tim. Now I
She's
have
like
to say.
She's like friends with Candice LeRae, I feel like. She got brought in by her friend Candice LeRae and then turned
Caden
on her.
And, Caden and Candice. Like twin Caden, sisters. Caden. Twin sisters from like Arkansas.
Yeah.
But Tim, it seems like I don't know if this is a rib or not, but it seems like the boss here at NXT has really he is really taking an interest in you, and it's possible Shit. he may end up playing some role like on screen as maybe like a manager or mentor, because you are going to be Lump Levesque. just Triple H putting your last name as
wow.
his.
that's extremely.
I'm spelling it just like he spells his too. Okay, so
Lump Levesque.
Yeah, Lump Levesque. Wow. I don't know if that's the kiss of death, or maybe they're setting me up for a nepotism angle. I don't know. You never know with these things.
Yeah, you're like his like Horace Hogan situation.
Yeah, totally.
As we know that all, you know. Yeah.
Definitely, so you're gonna be in the event or so. Not an offspring of on Paul Levesque, but probably a nephew. You're right.
But what that does mean is that you're going to make way more money than your talent, you know, warrants. So that's good.
All right.
If you're in the Horace Evad,
you'll win all of your matches. So you got that going for you.
All right. I'll take it.
All right. So we'll see how we fare.
I look forward to my WrestleMania run-in.
When they're showing you on the documentary where it's like, oh, look, he's the person who was like an extra on Triple H's entrance.
Yeah. When they run that Triple H Rock match at WrestleMania, I'm going to cost the People's Champion, make my great main roster debut.
Yep. All right. So I think we're off to success with that. We'll see how it plays out as we get to the end of this calendar year. But let us now shoot back to 2014. In the month of June, and we are fresh off the first ever takeover, so we're going to find out on this episode and this batch of NXT TV how they followed up to that very, I would say we were pretty positive on takeover. Really good show. So we'll see if they capitalize on that momentum in the set without any spoilers. We'll see how this goes. So we will start with the June 5th, 2014 episode of NXT TV. We start with a pretty standard recap of TakeOver, and then we are told that Tyler Breeze is in the building and all his finery and luster, as always. And then our opener tonight is going to be Mojo Rawley versus Aiden English, which is actually a pretty, you know, these are two people who have had a little bit of build on NXT and a little bit of a feud. I honestly don't remember about what. I just feel like they had some kind of conflict going. They talk on commentary, which we have the A-team on commentary with Regal, Byron Saxton, and Tom/Todd Phillips on commentary. and they speak about how Mojo is coming off his infamous rough night against Rusev at TakeOver, where he got his shit pushed in, as we covered in great detail on the last podcast. Regal just brutally mocks him for failing America. Just completely.
Failed his country.
Yeah. Talking about how Mojo failed his country and let America down. And then an even funnier follow-up, Byron is appalled that Regal would say that and asks how he failed this country, which I don't know how Byron does not understand how he failed this country.
It looked pretty overt to me.
Yeah. It seemed pretty obvious that he did fail his country. And so that exchange was probably the highlight of this match. We also get Regal at one point saying that Aiden did a musical with... So Regal is like all about the fun facts. That's like his thing. Yeah. Like every match, he has some fun fact. And here he says that Aiden did a musical with Katy Perry. Which kind of reminds me that this is like...
Why not?
It's like... Yeah, 2014, I guess, was probably like Katy Perry. She's like in her peak. I mean, I'm not saying she's not popular anymore, but I think this was when Katy Perry was like massive, like everywhere.
Yeah, I would agree. And then Regal also refers to, well, I don't want to step on your toes if you're getting to it, but he had a compliment. I guess it's a compliment for Aiden when he calls him a lithe beauty. Which is a word that doesn't get used enough. Like,
he also gets kicked to the nose, Aiden does, and Regal says that now he's going to be singing funny after a kick to the nose, and then does an impression of what Aiden is going to sound like, which was something like, and again, I'm going through all this because it was pretty much the highlight of the match, because this whole match was pretty much Mojo sells a lot, gets beat up by Aiden for a little while, and then just makes a comeback, hits his two moves. For everybody that says that NXT is overindulgent and people do too much stuff, you need to watch the Mojo Rawley, because that dude knows like a pair of moves. Yeah. So if you, he is certainly not overindulgent, because he just does
quite underindulgent.
He does like a shoulder block and hits his earthquake hyperdrive, and then he wins, which I thought kind of sucked for Aiden, because Aiden's been kind of semi-pushed, but he just kind of eats it. I want a star on this one. Not much to write home about in this match.
Yeah, but. I mean, you're not wrong. I like Mojo, I think, more than you guys, but I definitely like Aiden more. So as I'm watching the match, I'm thinking like, is this a glow up for Mojo after the disaster with Rusev, or is it going to be, you know, or is Aiden like on the downswing, you know, wrestling with Mojo? Like, I felt like he had kind of gotten above wrestlers like Mojo. And this looks like a step back for him. I don't know. But then Mojo wins. So I'm like, okay, that, you know, sort of looks bad for Aiden. So I'm with you. I'm like about a star on this one.
I'm not far off. I apparently gave it a star and a quarter. I must have really seen more to it than you guys. I don't know. I liked Aiden on offense here for the most part, controlling the match. I did think the finish was sort of abrupt, considering... Yeah. Like, Mojo only has his two moves, basically. He calls it the rear view and the hyperdrive. And that's sort of your basic Mojo Rawley match, is he makes his real quick comeback and usually wins because he's up against some jobber. And Aiden is definitely above the status of jobber to the star, so it is a shame to see him go down here. But it seems like we're going to be hitting something of a reset button on Aiden English going forward. So I guess in hindsight, the hindsight being the two other episodes we've watched in this little series here for our episode, I can't ding it too hard. Apparently, I liked this a little less than their earlier TV match from the 15th of May, which I gave a whopping star and three quarters. So... they're not putting in better work, unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess they thought of Aiden as kind of expendable as a singles guy, given what we're going to see very soon. Yeah. So I get what you're saying. It's not like the end of the world. But yeah, Mojo's weird, because he seems like he's supposed to be like this dominant power guy, and he kind of looks like one. but he always works the same match where he gets beat up for a while and then wins. But
and then the hyperdrive sucks anyway.
Right. Yes,
as we've covered, for fat guy offense.
Yeah, not enough junk in the trunk to really look impressive. But we cut to some footage from TakeOver, which I don't think we actually saw on the show, but it was apparently in the aftermath of the main event where we see Tyson Kidd. He's kind of walking off frustrated after losing to Neville, and he runs into Natty, who he kind of brushes off and I guess sort of pushes away, and kind of gives her a little bit of an attitude. So we're, it's supposed to be, I guess, like trouble in paradise with the couple. And so they interview Natty here, and she tries to brush it off and say that it wasn't much. And this will be a continuing saga that we'll see unfold. Were you guys initially compelled by this little segment?
I was weirded out by seeing Paul Heyman conducting this post-match interview from TakeOver. I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, did I miss something at TakeOver? Is this like what they're showing us what happened after they went off the air? I don't know, but that was a little bit jarring. And then we see Natty just making excuses basically for Tyson. So that's setting up the story and the character direction they're going to be taking Tyson Kidd. So I'm kind of down with it, I guess. He needs something.
Any thoughts on this relationship strife, Jenny?
Yeah, I mean, I just think Tyson looks like a little bitch.
Yeah. By design.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He's meant to, and he does really well at that.
Yeah, we'll continue to see his sort of character develop as we continue. We get a quick clip of Eva Marie and Xavier Woods' classic combo working at the Special Olympics. And then we head to our next match, which will be between Bayley and Charlotte. So again, which seems to be a common thing on these shows. We see these matchups that later on down the road would seem huge to just have on like a random NXT TV without much build or anything. So they kind of start off, this match is kind of what you would expect from them in the early going. Like Bayley does a lot of her sort of babyface offense stuff. Mm-hmm. I put that she does this like spinning spot where she gets on Charlotte's back and like spins around. So spinning based offense is what I called it.
Yeah.
And so they basically keep doing that until they keep, you know, going through their normal paces until the match is interrupted by Summer Rae, who gets a complete entrance, music and everything to interrupt the match. And so this is sort of, I guess, her big return. And she is affiliated with the BFFs, apparently. And so on her sort of entrance, it kind of looks like Bayley's going to win because maybe Charlotte's a little distracted, but she goes for kind of like a bridge and Charlotte gets out of it, which I thought was a cool spot. I did like the finish of the match when she kind of slides out of the bridge and it hits the natural selection. I thought that looked good. And she beats Bayley completely clean here. So I thought this was good for what it was. They didn't get a ton of time before Summer Rae comes out and they go home with it. I went 1.5 stars. It's not really on them. What they did was fine. It's just only so much they could do. Like, they didn't really get to work a full match or anything. But I did like the finish where they kind of teased that maybe Charlotte's going to lose it, and then they kind of flip out of it. So 1.5 stars for me.
Yeah, I was a little bit more generous. I went 2 stars on it. And I think I overrated it because that distraction of Summer Rae coming out, you think it's going to lead to the bullshit roll-up finish, mm-hmm. right? So I was expecting to get main roster angry. when that happened, but the fact that they waved that off and did give us a clean win for Charlotte, you know, she maintains her focus, like a champion should, and then, you know, just puts her away with that natural selection. I was like, all right, I'll give him props for this. So I don't feel bad about that 2 stars rating. I'm going to hit you with a comparison here that, Jenny, will make sense to you. Hopefully will make sense to you, Jake. Summer Rae, when she comes out, you know, kind of like blowing kisses to the crowd, she's channeling all of the impressive obliviousness of a 2002 TNA Bobcat, thinking it's all about her, like supposed to be in the corner of her team or whoever, her man. Charlotte is her man in this case. And that's, you know, the things that people said about Charlotte, that's a bad joke that came out bad.
No,
that's not what I meant. But anyway.
Summer ruined this whole match, so.
Yeah, pretty much. And the way that Bobcat kind of ruins those TNA matches. But once more, by design. So, I don't know. I sort of rock with it. Like that we're getting perhaps some closure. Well, I'll be honest. I don't really care that we're getting closure to this BFF single, but it was a dropped thread. Mm-hmm. The departure of Summer Rae, very sudden, and now she's back, so I guess they can pay that off. And, you know, they have their little reunion at the end, beating Bailey's ass. So, in some ways, it's a little bit regressive, but there is some unfinished business here, so I'll take it.
Regressive, that is the word that I would use to describe this match, because coming off of TakeOver, Charlotte had an amazing, insane match. And, you know, I get story-wise or whatever, Summer's going to come back here to steal her thunder a little bit, and that's fine. But, like, it just overall, it feels like a regression to more of the cattiness and the brattiness.
Yeah.
Instead of the, like, you know, we just had this emotional match that Charlotte went through at TakeOver, you know, and that was like sort of, you know, star making big girl shit, you know, and now we're doing cat fights with the mean girl that came back. So, you know, I'm at 2 stars for this match too, but I was not super thrilled with the return of Summer.
Yeah, it's almost like Summer signifies like going back to where they were like before, because you can kind of see them building the women's division as we know now, and sort of, you know, I think it kind of hurts to mention that it would be different if it was somebody like we were excited to see return that came in and blew up the match, but instead Summer, and we're kind of like,
this shit, because
we know she's gonna bring more BFFs, you know,
and also like. Just being petty, like her boobs really bother me in her outfits.
Okay.
Because they're just like smushed together. Like there's just no proper distance, and like it just looks like, I don't know, unnaturally close together. I don't know. It's weird.
You need more cavernous boobage, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you need like something on the side. You know what I'm saying? Like some side boob. All her
side boob.
Right there.
Yeah.
Too much up boob, not enough side boob.
Right.
Yeah, it's a bit snug, I would say, probably.
Right. Yes.
But as Tim mentioned, the BFFs do jump Bailey, but we get Paige, who has somehow found time in her globetrotting reign as Divas Champion to find her way back to NXT to come in this random moment and save Bailey. And Emma does the same. So they come out and they save. And so they kind of position the three of them against the BFFs here. How angry were you to see Paige here, Tim?
I was main roster angry.
She has no time to defend that title, but she can't.
Yeah, you got to take it off of her because she can't be pulling double duty. She'll be too busy. She don't have time for NXT.
So, you know, backstage with no scheduled match, but I'm too busy. Yeah.
So she'll be on 8 more NXT shows.
So we go backstage and we see Ty Dillinger and Jason Jordan, who I think we've been introduced to before. Have we seen them wrestle yet? I don't remember. I want to say we have.
Yeah, I think I said really mean things about him last time.
You were not nice towards Jason Jordan earlier in this podcast.
I love how Jake is the one who doesn't remember things, and I remember that. That's very weird.
It's been like...
17 years or so.
I don't know. In my mind, it's been like 8 months of the time we're on now. But I just put that they're practicing their Boom Boom song because they're working on some like song.
This was such an old promo.
Stupid.
Yeah, they look like some goobers.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. But We get a recap of Ascension facing Kalisto and El Locale, which we covered on the last podcast, before we get to the aforementioned Ty Dillinger and Jason Jordan coming out to face some real local talents. We have Stuart Cumberland and Philip Guljar, who apparently Guljar, I looked up, is either dated or is dating Bailey. So
affiliated with
her. Yes, Guljar, okay. Which that is pretty much all the commentary talks about during this entire match. It's Guljar's name. Not really a whole lot about the match. And I also put that these were names where I had the name generator. Stuart Cumberland just seems like something.
You did better than me. I wrote down something Cumberland because I didn't catch his first name. So they said Guljar enough that I was like, I shouldn't give them the local competitors treatment. That's usually what I write these jobber names down as. But I was like, okay, so Philip Guljar and the other one they keep calling Cumberland. So, all right, that's enough. So, yeah, I have something Cumberland and Philip Guljar versus Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger.
Yes, and I also know that Jason Jordan is, like, ripped. He is just completely
shredded.
Yeah,
he looks. yeah, and so this match. So, obviously, the whole point of this is to try and get Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger over because we have a desolate tag division, and we need somebody to be able to face the Ascension. So they're trying to position as contenders, but to me, this did not do a great job of doing that. It was a squash. They did go over Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger, but didn't find they looked particularly impressive in it. They didn't do much to really establish any kind of identity for them or what their team's really about. It was kind of slow and plodding for a squash match, kind of dragged on a little bit too long. Like I said, they didn't really look impressive on commentary. They didn't really put them over very much. They were just too busy talking about Guljar's name. And Jason Jordan
Guljar, does one with the to say. You have to say Guljar when you have a competitor named Guljar.
Yeah, they're putting that over more than the team they're trying to establish. And Jason Jordan wins with the Jordan Slam, which was basically the angle slam. Exactly. So you can kind of see they're trying to draw parallels, which apparently that's his dad. His dad's, of course, as they mentioned on commentary here. Oh, wait, no, they didn't.
not yet.
That is no long-term booking. They were not sowing the seeds of Jason Jordan as Angle's son back in 2014, unfortunately. Yeah. But I went a half a star because I went a little bit lower than I normally do for a squash because, again, I thought it kind of sucked for what a squash is supposed to do.
All right. Well, you're right. They just bickered the entire time. Like, I thought the commentary was real adversarial most of the time, like, with each other, to the point of awkwardness a couple of times. So, some shaky commentary. I did give it one star. Half of that star goes to Dillinger's ass cheeks, because they look really good. And that little, their briefs or whatever, trunks are, like, silver and red. It's a real sharp look, kind of be honest with you. And Jordan was ripped, and he did all right here. I don't hate him as much as I did previously. So, it was all right. I gave it a star and a half. Tim?
I just want a star on this one. And much of that rating, similar to you, Jenny, goes to the ass rate of the match, more so than the work rate, because this definitely was far too competitive for, I guess, what's meant to be a squash. It's sort of not really, because it goes on too long and it's just too back and forth. Trying to set up Jordan and Dillinger as these new challengers in waiting. My God, we have a tag match that isn't an Ascension match. We're getting better at this, right? But still not giving us anything all that impressive. And I would agree with Jake that coming out of this, I look at Jordan and Dillinger and I'm like, yeah, they won, but do they look like serious contenders now? Not really. I do have written down that Guljar dies almost at one point, falling right on his head. So I don't know what you make of that. You certainly don't see him
The ghost of Gulljar finishes the match.
Yeah, yeah. The ghost of Gulljar is now, anyway. You don't
locally
see him wrestling.
Talent.
Locally deceased, yes. Thank you. And he's not, is he still wrestling in addition to dating Bailey today? Like, what's his story?
I want to say I looked it up, and he kind of is, but nothing really of note. And Stuart Cumberland apparently must be doing nothing, because I couldn't find anything on him, which, you know, it makes sense. They had to protect him in this match, given his trajectory.
Yeah, I guess so.
Couldn't let him get squashed. You know?
Right.
Gulljar needs a finisher called Whiskey in the Gulljar. That could be
like it.
If, you know, they cared about him as a wrestler, that could be his finisher.
Yeah.
But as we get go away from this match, we see that CJ Parker is protesting. He has a sign that says, "May the force be with you." Get it? Mm-hmm. To which Regal responds, "Go away, hippie." And that was pretty much it. And then we head backstage.
He gets increasingly vicious in his, his comments towards
it's
CJ Parker.
It's not even clever. It's not even really clever. He's just, like, he doesn't do, like, his normal Regal turn of phrase. He just, like, tells him to go away, which is
He
amazing.
Has a good one coming up. Not in this episode, but we'll get there.
But, yeah, screw that guy caring about the environment. We go backstage. the BFFs. Who are catching up with their long lost pal Summer Rae. So they're just kind of talking in their normal BFF way, where they're like friends, but they're kind of mean to each other, like underhandedly, sort of.
Yeah.
In their, you know, classic mean girl behavior, of course, as Renee has told us. And then we cut to our number one contender, Tyler Breeze, in the ring. He says he beat Seth Rogen's less good looking brother at NXT TakeOver. And we get an Olé chant because obviously they're trolling him for Sammy. Regal calls it rude. He calls him the man that Maybelline. I think he calls Neville this, right? I forget if it was Neville or Sammy. We called somebody the man that Maybelline forgot.
Which yeah, was Neville.
It was Neville.
Neville. Yeah, the man Maybelline forgot, which is a really funny line because it's like.
Funny.
So he's. Like, the man Maybelline forgot, I guess he thinks he should be wearing makeup. And he also says that he's going to be revealing his 3-time MTV Euro Award winning music video.
That's right.
His theme song. So we cut to that. It is him in the studio with many purple hues everywhere. All right. So give me your thoughts on the Tyler Breeze music video.
It slaps.
Yeah. Wow. Time to sing a song.
I am so gorgeous.
That was so cringy, y'all. It was bad. But,
I loved it.
What I loved about it was Tyler just being really fucking serious about it. Like, he's all in on all of this. And which we've said, like, from day one, how good he is at this, but I feel like watching him in the studio and listening to that ridiculous song, it went really next level with his character being outrageous.
Oh, it's great. I think this needs to be up there with the all-time great wrestling songs. It just doesn't get talked about. It's...
It's a hidden gem.
It should be in the conversation with Rap is Crap and With My Baby Tonight. And that's about it, really. But, I mean, still, I like when we got some clarification on these lyrics also, which I always knew his interest theme had lyrics, but they're so auto-tuned to death. There's just completely indecipherable. And here you're like, oh, okay, that's what they're saying.
I think at one point he says something's gonna set you free. I have to look up the lyrics, but
yeah,
something's gonna set you free. I also like that in the credits everything is him. It's like directed by Tyler Breeze.
Yes.
song, lyrics, everything Tyler Breeze.
Brilliant.
Which is a nice touch. But yeah, I thought it worked for his character. I feel like it could, like, obviously it was meant to be bad, I think, like, to be weird and cheesy, but like for some reason it works for him. Like, it doesn't even come off as super hokey, I find, because I don't know. He's just able to pull off this character. So kudos to him. The crowd was into it too.
Yeah, it gets over with the crowd. Which is, you know, credit to him.
It kind of reminded me, like, in a weird way, this is like something they would do on like the old like NWA shows where they just have these random wrestlers and they make these kind of really kind of low production quality little music videos with them. Like, this is like a staple of like 80s wrestling, like syndicated TV. And it was just funny to see them like do this with Tyler Breeze and his.
I think it is a vignette, but something like artistic but shitty at the same time.
Yeah, I think people forget that there's lyrics to it. Because I, like, before we started doing this, I remember like the little techno beat, but I forgot that he sings over it. Like, he.
It's ridiculous lyrics as well.
I am so gorgeous. What?
And in the beginning, it says, dedicated to all my fans, even the Uggos.
So we should put at the beginning of the pod. Dedicated to all my hypothetical fans.
All of our hypothetical listeners.
But to follow this up, we get another music video, not necessarily a music video, but a montage set to music of Bo Dallas, which is extremely cheesy. Yes. They put this like impoverished, like Rocky song to it. And it's just him. After his just telling people to leave, it's just him standing on the ramp at one point. And he just keeps telling them, he's like, no, seriously, you have to leave. No, why don't you all leave? And it's just him doing that for like a minute straight. But typical absurdity, so I was into it.
Yeah, I love the swelling, inspirational 80s-esque music just to send him packing, basically. He just shows him losing to Big E.
I guess I was a little surprised. I mean, I was like, didn't we already say goodbye to Bo? Like, what are we doing? Right. Like, it took me a minute. And then, wow. I love the video, though.
It feels rib, right?
Yeah.
Like they're still, this is all completely in universe and character, but it's like they're. The show's just making fun of him now.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine, because it's fun to make fun of him, because he cracks me up. But anyway, as we get that heartfelt tribute to Bo Dallas as he's leaving NXT, we go to our main event, actually, already on our main event, which is going to be Justin Gabriel versus Neville. And for some reason, this match is no DQ. They did not really give any rationale as to why they made this no DQ. So we'll see what happens. Regal, in his fun fact, says that Justin Gabriel likes to use a tiny parachute to skydive. So, all right.
For the 300th time.
More or less risky than a standard size parachute. It implies that it's more risky. You go
faster, I think.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. He does seem like a guy who would skydive, though. We get a lot of arm bars and jockeying in the beginning. They kind of just kind of feel each other out for a long time. We get a nice little sequence. I thought one spot that stood out to me is like Justin Gabriel counters like a sleeper into a bridge at one point. That was pretty cool. They do like the midair dropkick spot that Neville pulls out in a lot of matches. And at one point, by the latter half of the match, Gabriel had like he had kind of like a black eye, a little shiner going on. So I don't know when Neville must have stiffed him or something. But as typical in these kind of Neville main events on TV, it ends with him winning with the Red Arrow. Of course, this was, to me, a perfectly acceptable, as Tim said, kind of, Tim usually says, like, perfunctory. It was like perfunctory, but perfectly fine. TV main event, nothing to write home about. Justin Gabriel's kind of weird to me, because he seems like super athletic, but like really not exciting at all. Like, he's like, he seems like almost like he could be close to Neville as far as like how athletic he is, but nothing he does really looks particularly impressive. Like, I feel like you're like, oh, that's pretty cool, but it's nothing that really sticks with you. I don't know. But yeah, I like the second half of the match. I thought the first half was kind of ho-hum, but they picked it up nice at the end. I went 2.25 on it. Perfectly fine TV main event to put over your champion.
Yeah, I would agree with you on most of that. Like, it's unpolished was my note. Like, I feel like they have zero chemistry, number one. And Gabriel does, like, he does look good. Like, he can do it. But you could tell that Neville was helping him along quite a bit. And Gabriel just couldn't seem to get into some sort of flow. I don't know. It just seemed like his moves were sloppy. And then he tries this arm submission hold. I don't know what it's called. Where he's like battling against Neville's arms with his arms. And I'm like, this is stupid. Neville has sick arms and you are going to die like that. Like, don't do that. It just seemed like he couldn't really like put anything together. The midair drop kick on Neville was pretty good, and the red arrow, of course, beautiful as always, but I was fairly disappointed in this match. Mm-hmm. And so I did 2.25 as well, Tim.
Yeah, we're 3 for 3, 2.25. And I would agree with pretty much all of that. Something's missing with Justin Gabriel. I just remember him as being the flashy guy from that first batch of NXT dudes back in, 2010 or whatever, when it was a competition sort of variety show, whatever you want to call it. And he hung around. I didn't know until we started doing this podcast that he was still employed in 2014. And these couple times we've seen him here in NXT, like by this point, he's a journeyman wrestler. And just seems like he should be more fluid, I guess, than mm-hmm. he really is. And mm-hmm. it's just there's no real sizzle there. And he does kind of need to be led along by Neville here. And that's just surprising to me. I got shades of a great value AJ Styles from Ooh. Justin Gabriel. I think that's...
I could see that, yeah.
Like what it's aspiring to, mm-hmm. but not getting there, mm-hmm. with his work. And yeah, that red arrow, always good for at least a star for me. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing terrible. I'll say it. It's perfectly perfunctory.
Yes. So after this match concludes, Tyson Kidd comes out and says that he feels like a fool for the way he acted after TakeOver and the way he acted to Neville. He says in a very, he gives a very Canadian, I'm sorry. he says he'll win next time and he wants another shot. So he basically comes out and apologizes, just starts begging for another title shot, mm-hmm. Which I thought, like you guys mentioned earlier, he looks like kind of a wiener. Like, he's like getting mad at his wife. And then he comes out and just apologizes and starts begging for a title shot. Neville agrees because Neville's a fighting champion. Mm-hmm. And thought it was kind of anticlimactic because when he agrees to it, normally in these moments when some guy's agreeing to a rematch or a title match, you want the crowd to pop, and the crowd was just completely silent whenever Neville agrees to it, mm-hmm. even though they tried to like let it build a little bit. And another thing I'm thinking is like Tyler Breeze must be like, what the fuck, dude? Like,
exactly.
And this guy just comes out crying, I'm sorry, give me a title. He's like, okay, fine. He's like, I had to beat somebody to get this title shot. Like, you had your shot and you lost, you loser. Like, get out of my way. So
yeah,
that was kind of...
Yeah, I don't care that Neville's okay with it. It's, you don't get to just say, okay, yeah, we're just going to do this because the guy whined enough about it.
Yeah.
It's so, like what happened in the writer's room. Like, it's like somebody had this storyline and somebody had this storyline. It's like... We can't do them both. And they're like, what if we just did them both? And we're just like...
we can't do them both, but
what if we just did, though? I'm like, okay. Because that was my note here. I was like, what about Tyler Breeze? Mm-hmm. But maybe it'll come into play later. I don't know.
I mean, I take it as Tyler still has his title shot, but...
Fight anybody he wants, I guess?
Yeah, it certainly implies that he's not the number one contender if... Someone else is getting a title shot before he is. He's a number two contender.
And the reason the crowd doesn't give a fuck is because that match of TakeOver was not that good. So we don't need to see it. I think I said we don't need to see another one of these matches.
Yeah. I mean, it was fine, but are we jonesing for a rematch? Not really.
No, there's definitely not the feeling of taker of like, oh man, they left someone on the table. You're like, okay, you wanted to have Tyson Kidd come because it's, you know, one of your first big shows. He's a guy with some name value who's pretty talented, you know. But now I feel like people are like, okay, we've seen that. Let's move on to something hotter. And then they're like, hey, let's move on to something hotter, like Tyler Breeze as the number one contender. Mm-hmm. So it makes it seem like they want to kill some more time with Tyson Kidd before they move on. So they just have to find some, and it's just, mm-hmm. it's kind of lazy, but
yeah.
So kind of a fart in church in the show, I would say, with the main event. With kind of a lackluster main event and kind of a lame angle to finish it off. But that wraps up the first episode. I thought, like we said, the main event was fine, but kind of disappointing. The music videos were kind of fun, but you could definitely get the feeling that this is a cool down episode after TakeOver, because there's really nothing of note happens, really. I mean, unless you want to say Summer Rae returning is something of note, but it wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. Just not really much happening, nothing really good in terms of matches. I think this is one of the weaker ones that we've seen since we started the pod. I went 3.5 out of 10. Not the best episode,
dude. I'm with you. I'm at 3 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Like, I was excited too, right? Because we enjoyed TakeOver for the most part, and I don't know, this, it was not good, not great.
3 seems about right. You could skip this episode and feel like you had missed anything, just because we did a TakeOver, so naturally there's no real momentum. We have to figure out where we're going after that. And you don't get a clear indication of that from this show at all. It's just sort of there because they have a weekly television commitment. So it's disappointing, but at the same time, they can kind of get away with it because we did just do a big show. So it's like, whatever, it's fine.
And I think we're definitely, as like more modern wrestling fans, not accustomed to this, because it's pretty, you know, it's not really the way it's been done in a really long time. Like, usually the mindset is you want to come out after your big show and like hit the ground running into your next thing, where they're going with the motto of, okay, we just had a big show, let's kind of reset a little bit, slow it down, and then build back up.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately makes for some doo-doo TV from time to time. It's kind of boring, which this episode was, but we'll see if they improve with the next one. So we'll roll on into the June 12th, 2014 NXT. Unfortunately, we switch over to the B team on commentary, which will be our boy Rich, Renee Young, and then Alex Riley on commentary. The lesser Alex Riley, of course, as always.
Always.
And then we start, I feel Tim's anger building as we go to our opening match, which is going to be Bayley, Emma, and Paige versus the BFFs, Charlotte, Sasha, and Summer Rae, building off of the conflict they had last episode with the Bayley beatdown. So again, Paige has no time to defend her title, but here she is in a six-woman tag match. Tim, any thoughts on this?
I don't know. At this point, I just feel kind of vindicated in my rant, which probably went on too long on the episode that she got stripped of the title. Like, I probably said more than I needed to, but week after week after week of seeing Paige on these shows, whether wrestling or just, you know, making an appearance, I'm like, kind of feel like I had a point. So, I don't know. Not to toot my own horn, but toot.
Right, as always. But anyway, I was excited for the match, aside from the kind of ridiculousness of Paige being around, in that I think sometimes when they have – the good thing about NXT is they only have like an hour to fill, so they don't resort to this type of match that often where they just throw a bunch of people in. So because they do it so sparingly, I was kind of excited to see all of them in one match together. And it did have a little bit of build, so that was pretty cool. So we start in – basically, it starts with Emma getting isolated really quickly. She's sort of the face in peril, so you start working her down. At one point, Charlotte does a head scissors, and Renee points out the strength of Charlotte's thighs. So that lasts for a little while until – and they do kind of a lot of quick tags to continue to work down Emma, who actually did a pretty good job, like, selling and stuff. At one point, Renee then says that it's hard to have a faction with blondes. So I'm not really sure. why it would be hard to have a faction with blondes.
She does not elaborate.
I mean, the Hollywood blondes, they did pretty well.
Yes, that's right.
So, but anyway, Emma gets a tarantula, and that is kind of her way of breaking the momentum as she's getting her ass beat, which allows her to tag Bailey. Bailey comes in, kind of does the hot tag thing. Charlotte wastes some time arguing with Summer, which allows Bailey to score with a roll up to win. I enjoyed this pretty well. I went 2.5 on it. I thought it had a good little narrative, kind of like your basic tag formula, which is kind of like wrestling comfort food to me. And I thought Emma did a good job. I thought the heels did a good job with all the quick tags and stuff to work her down. And it was a good kind of callback to last week where they subverted last week, but now they go back to it where Bailey ends up getting her win back because Charlotte's distracted with Summer, and it makes us think there is going to be some strife between them. Thoughts on this one?
I just went 1.5 on this. I kind of, yeah, I wasn't feeling it. I think I dinged it for being disappointing given the talent involved. Not that they had a lot of time, but I did think they could have done more with the time they were given. Yes, Emma was a good face in peril, but I don't know. Some of that heel offense was just, it felt like it could have been like any team in there, not who we would think of as the forebearers of the women's revolution, right? It was just sort of by the numbers for me. I was a little confused by Charlotte just booting Summer Rae out of the ring for no real reason. Like, it just felt really petty and shitty. I mean, I like it, but I'm like, why? Like, why would she do that? Because then she gets rolled up by Bailey, and that leads to our rather shit finish. That's kind of a main roster shit finish there. So I probably dinged it for that too, to be honest. But I mean, I should be used to that kind of stuff. And it is just a TV match, but I don't know. I was disappointed given the people involved here. And the commentary, once again, with
the commentary was awful. It was just so bad. At one point, one of them says, "You know how women are," and Renee's like, "What do you mean by that?" And like acts all offended, and then she says something equally fucked up. I'm like,
right,
Renee, you are not helping. You're not a fucking benefit to these women's matches anymore. Like, they trot her out here. Sometimes she'll get a whole show, sometimes she won't. I'm sort of over her. Also, why is Paige here? Does she even wrestle in the match? Does anybody ever tag Paige?
I don't think she really does anything.
Yeah, really.
So, yeah. Emma gets her ass beat. Bailey gets a quick roll up. And Paige does nothing. And then they win. I'm like, okay. And then the other teams over there fighting on the sidelines, pulling each other's hair. And I'm just overall disappointed, like, as a female in this entire travesty. 1 star.
Wow.
Oh, man.
We
saw small positive here.
I'll say this much. I'm glad that we didn't waste any time getting to the infighting within the BFFs. Like, clearly they're doing like a you can't go home again sort of story here with them. And hopefully that means we will be done with this in pretty short order. We're just wrapping up this whole Summer Rae thing. And this is probably going to be a split between Charlotte and Sasha too, because they've had some tension in recent weeks as well, which has sort of gotten swept under the rug because Summer's there like sucking up all their heat. But yeah. I don't know. It could lead to, like, I agree that there's much better things they could be doing here, but it could be paid. Like, there is a payoff here if they do it right. So I'm trying to get
what they're doing in a way that makes sense in wrestling storytelling. I just don't think they should be doing this at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Summer's almost in the like the Tyson Kidd like equivalent here, where, like, they're trying to shove her in here because they feel like she has notoriety because she's been on the main roster and stuff, but to us as people who are watching NXT, we don't give a shit about that. We feel like there's more interesting things Charlotte could be doing, just like we think there's more interesting things Neville could be doing, but they feel kind of dead set on putting these people in that they feel are, I guess, like bigger names.
Like they're going to give a rub. Kind of,
yeah.
Somebody cares enough about Summer Rae to think, oh, this is legitimizing Charlotte and Sasha. Come on.
Charlotte Flair, Ric Flair's daughter. He needs Summer Rae. She needs Summer Rae to give her the rub to get over. Yeah, right. Sure.
The champion. Yeah. Definitely needs that.
All right. Well,
who just turned in.
Anyway.
Greatest women's match in company history.
Right.
Up to this point.
Yeah. Well, we'll continue backstage to JBL, who has a new signing, a mass wrestler. Who dubs himself Mr. NXT. And JBL says that he believes he will be great. So this mysterious masked wrestler we'll see more of later. Sasha and Charlotte are pissed at Summer. Whenever we get Alexa Bliss walks up, Alexa is, I feel like here she's looking a little bit closer to what we like her main roster look like, what she would become. Like, doesn't look quite as much in the kind of generic cheerleader looking outfit. I thought her look is kind of starting to evolve closer to what we know. And she just kind of goes up and challenges Sasha to a match, like really not a lot to it. Just a way to set them up with a match. And then we see CJ Parker continuing to protest before we head back to the ring. Any thoughts on any of these rapid fire backstage segments, guys?
Oh, what a whirlwind.
Yes.
It does kill some minutes. I'll give it that.
I mean, I want Bo to go away, okay? I want him to go away. But also, that was funny. And I don't know what it is about Bo. Like, how do I want to see him and not want to see him at the same time?
Isn't it weird that he's been hanging on for, like, half the year at this point?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, still there somehow.
I just love that he's doing like a Midnight Rider, like yeah. Like impoverished Midnight Rider.
Mask, you know, Captain Underpants, more like it.
It's like all these great, you know, iconic wrestlers who did this, like Junkyard Dog, Dusty Rhodes, and now we have Neville as Mr. NXT. It cracks me up. It's so good. But all right, we head out to the ring for what looks to be a banger on paper. It's going to be, not Big Cass, just Cass. He is big, and his name is Cass, but he's not Big Cass yet. And he will be facing... He's big, but you got to put a lowercase B on big. It's just a normal adjective, not part of his name yet. And he's going to be facing Sylvester Lafour, the French gentleman. This match, like... It was a squash match where Cass goes over Sylvester Lafour. One of the main things I noticed about this match is like the commentary was super sparse. Like I feel like they weren't speaking enough, especially in a match with Sylvester Lafour and Cass kind of doing a squash match. I feel like they needed to talk more. Like there's just like these weird moments of silence, which is not good. Just this whole thing was not great.
They didn't even know what to say.
It was kind of rough because it felt like I was watching like something on local TV, like a local promotion that's playing on like the public access or something. Just with really good like production, really good production value. I want to start because I normally do for a squash match, but probably this is less than that just because it was so odd.
Well, it was so notable, and it's so memorable to me, in fact, that I have it written down on my spreadsheet as Big Cass versus Marcus Louis. You know Marcus Louis, right? The other one.
LaForte's young boy, yes.
Yeah, he's a young boy. I didn't even think Sylvester Lafour was in this match. I did notice that. big cast seriously dwarfs Sylvester LaFleur. I mean, it's like so. A lot of times you can't tell those relative height differences because everybody's so fucking huge. But in this case, there's just like a very clear disparity between the two. And it was weird because LaFleur is like doing all this limb work and Cass just totally waves it off. Like it hits him with a big boot and puts him away with his finisher, which apparently is called the East River Crossing. So great. I think we had more to say about it than the commentary team. I would agree. And I gave it my squash rating of a star. So we're on the same page there.
Add me to that list. You know, whatever. It was fine. Just I got nothing for this. It's fine. I don't understand. Like, but whatever.
Yeah, sometimes.
We'll see it.
Honestly, the people who are getting paid to talk about it on TV can't think of anything to say while it's happening. So I'll cut us a little bit of slack on it.
Yeah.
Just a baffling match. But so we continue with the saga of Tyson and Natty as we see that there's some conflict between them. As Tyson says, he does not want to be distracted by Natalya when he faces Neville again. So continuing the marital struggles of Natty and Tyson Kidd here.
God, Tyson's such a fucking dick to her. Right? She's just like, look, I'm just trying to say, like, I'm just going to be ringside. He's just like, look, bitch, I don't know where you're going to be at. I don't care. I'm just trying to win this match. At that point, she should have said, well, fuck you then. I'm out.
And a lot of this is sort of playing upon the whole how people chant Natty's husband at him when he comes out. So I kind of like that they're capitalizing. Yeah, I sort of like that they're capitalizing on it. I don't know that it helps him necessarily because it's sort of acknowledging this inferiority that he is perceived with, like without kind of curing it. But I don't know, sometimes you just lean into these things because it's right there and what else can you do?
Yeah, I think he could work, but I think he has to go like more just heelish. Like he's really got to lean into it and you just be completely like jealous and, you know, he's an asshole kind of thing. But right now he just kind of comes off, like Jenny said, like he's just being a dick and he's just comes off as kind of a wiener. Like he's just pissed off at his wife because he can't win and stuff.
Right.
Like he's more just kind of like a depressing loser than, you know, like.
Than a detestable heel.
Yes.
Fine line there.
He needs to be meaner to her, I guess is what we're saying.
Jake's like, this is weak.
We need more domestic abuse in this storyline.
Yeah.
For it to really click.
But like Tim said, they're like, they dance around it and there's like an undercurrent of it, but they won't commit to it enough to really make it part of the storyline.
Right.
So it's like, I want them to go further into it if they're going to, it's almost like too subtle, I guess. But
yeah, I'm kind of, again, this is me trying to give benefit of the doubt, taking it as a slow burn. So we'll see if we get there. But the question is, how much patience can you expect your audience to have with somebody who is, like, I don't know, as flat personality-wise as Tyson Kidd?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He's not Flair on the mic or anything either, right. So that doesn't help.
Yeah, nobody's really, like, holding their breath waiting on this guy to get his shit together.
Yeah, boy, I can't wait until Tyson Kidd really breaks out. It's not really a thing.
But we have Aiden singing backstage and his beautiful his beautiful voice that Regal always tells us about, and he's approached by a speechless chap who speaks to him, who looks familiar if you've seen wrestling in the past 5 years or so, or if you were around New Orleans at WrestleMania 34, you may have seen him also. So we'll see. They kind of have an interaction. It looks like they may be pals. So we'll see how this develops. And then we get our match between Sami Zayn and Mr. NXT. So I was entertained by this because, first of all, I love that he comes in Mr. NXT and he clearly does all of Bo's moves, like all his mannerisms. Like he's not even trying to hide it at all. The crowd starts a "You Can't Fool Us" chant. Like, I just love how obvious he is with it. And not even trying to convince anyone it's not Bo. Sammy mocks him a bunch of times. He already gets unmasked like within about 5 minutes of the match. It really was more of an angle than anything. It was an actual match. It was kind of just, you know, a comedy thing to see Bo again get humiliated one last time before he goes out, because there's nothing better than watching him get humiliated. I did think it was kind of weird to introduce it like they did and then pay it off this quickly. Like, you would think you would build up, maybe if you are going to do this, like him trying to hide his personality, that they would build it and build it until you finally get to see him unmasked. Like, he's already, like, they just immediately went for it. So it was like a one show angle. I went a star and a half on the match. It was entertaining for what it was, but you know, nothing that's going to go anywhere.
So I was at a star on this. It's a misuse of Sammy, in my opinion. Like, I think you can kind of do this with somebody not as good as Sammy, maybe. But we didn't really talk post-match stuff. I guess we can do that. But it was good to see Sammy at least finally fucking win a match, I guess. And yes. Other than that, it's just that weird Bo energy that is cringy but also funny. I just, like, I'm pretty much done with it. Like, I'm good with, like, that being the end. Like you said, one last send off for Bo. All right, see you later. Let's move on.
Yeah, it's sort of like, is this going to be his new gimmick of finding various contrived ways to try to stay on?
Oh my NXT. God, I hope not.
Like, I don't know. I don't remember, like, watching this stuff. Like I said, I don't remember him being around this long. So you got me. Maybe that's where they're going with this. But this is entertaining for what it is. I like that the commentary skirts that line between obnoxious and actually funny. Mainly obnoxious, but yes, there are a few moments. Mm-hmm. Like,
Alex Renee Riley was just, like, insufferable.
Well, she did have a good moment where she suggests that Alex Riley should pay more attention to NXT superstars' physiques, because she finds Mr. NXT to be quite familiar, and Alex Riley is just sort of playing into the, oh, he's a Mexican gold medalist in the Olympics across multiple disciplines. Wow. He's really impressive here, right?
Yeah. That and, doesn't sound made up at all.
No. Mm-hmm. But, good to see Sammy skanking Sami Zayn. I have written down. Mm-hmm. Apparently we drew attention to this. Not like it's anything new, but I don't know. They found it notable. So he gets the win. Thankfully, it is, as you said, good to see Sammy finally win one. And he does win against a former, it's sort of hard to believe at this point, but a former NXT champion. So it's not nothing. And the crowd playing along with their dueling "You Can't Fool Us, Yes He Can" chants. Mm-hmm. that's nice. Bo is then dragged literally kicking and screaming to the main roster, I gather, unless we're going to, again, keep doing this. And so, hindsight, once again, 2020 here. Something very meta to his extreme resistance to be dragged out of the next. Right?
They chase her around for so long.
It takes so long. Forever.
It's going and going and going, and you're like, wow, he really doesn't want to go to that main roster, does he? Wonder why.
So at one point they're coming after him. So he's just running around the ring and, like, they can't catch him. At one point, he says, "He touched my bum." And he says, "Let me get a sip of water." Everything he says. I think his oil level probably helps him escape from the security.
Yeah.
Because he's oil so oily. He's like, slippery. He can slink away. And then maybe my favorite part of this whole thing is that when they finally do get him, it's not even like a real police car. It's one of those like three-wheel like campus police like little car things that they get. Yes. They haul him away in that. So that a pop for the three-wheel.
You know, for all the shenanigans, I actually went a star and three quarters on this. And I think it's because of all the surrounding nonsense that bumps it up for me a little bit.
Yeah, like I like the nonsense to a point, but then they just drug it out like entirely too long.
Yeah.
There was a pretty good pun of police botality. It's pretty funny, but then, overall, about a one star.
Yeah, it's like they saw the thing he did when he first got sent out, and they're like, "Wow, that was pretty funny. Why don't we do this, but like make it three times more absurd?
Why don't we do it again?
Like,
yeah,
do it again and make it more ridiculous." So, all right, so we'll see. I'm thinking this will be a last of Bo, but we'll see if he comes up with any more disguises. All right, real quick, we get a Alberto Del Rio PSA, which is real uncomfortable to think about in retrospect. Yes, about I think about family or something, like him and his daughter, and I was like, yikes.
Family values.
Yes. And then we get to our main event, which is going to be Neville, Adrian Neville versus Tyson Kidd for the title. This is the title shot that Tyson Kidd begged for, even though he lost the takeover. And this, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they said it was going to be no DQ as well. Sure why. But the first thing I noticed about this as they start is that the crowd is pretty dead for this match. considering it's a title match, they are pretty silent. So I thought this was pretty much, I won't go through the whole match because I thought it was basically like their takeover match, but not quite as good as it, like kind of similar sort of thing, but not quite as much energy or just didn't click the same way. And even that, we even said the takeover match was disappointing. I think this one was even a notch below that. I don't know if it's just for me, like Tyson just doesn't peel my potato. I don't know. He's like, he's obviously talented, but there's something about it I just can't get in. Like he sort of tops out for me at a certain point. I just can't get into him. Sort of like what we said about Justin Gabriel, but not on a Justin Gabriel level. He's above that, but it's sort of the same sort of thing. And like we said the whole night, the commentary didn't help this at all. They did nothing to make this seem like it was some big title match. And then they do the natty thing where Tyson gets frustrated. He goes to use the chair. And I'm thinking, okay, that's why they put the no DQ, because now he can use a chair. It's the only way it goes in. And you know, the stuff with Natalya kind of felt shoehorned in, like they wanted to get that angle in here. So they have him go for the chair. I'm hoping it's over. He does lose, so I'm hoping that this is the end of the Tyson Neville stuff. But as a match, I want 2.5. It was fine, but a little disappointing considering the stuff we've seen from Neville, even with other opponents. So, what did y'all think?
Jenny, what do you got?
Well, Jenny agrees with that. And yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the exact same match that they had, except Natty doesn't let him cheat and win when Neville gets his foot up on the rope. There's some alarming discussion about like gender roles and stuff in the middle of this. Like you said, not helping anything. Like, I feel actively hurting sort of everything. it was just and commentary to me is like, it should be like my inner monologue on the outside, right? Like, I want the commentary to reflect how I feel. And like, none of that was just... It was just not good. The Red Arrow, of course, again, beautiful. But 2 and what did I do? 2.25 stars for me, Tip.
So y'all are gonna shit. I thought this was a notch better than their take for Match. I think because it managed to overcome my disinterest going in, just kind of that ennui surrounding Tyson Kidd, which I totally agree with. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like thinking, all right, this is, they got a lot of time. I bet it's going to be a bunch of stalling, like typical TV main event. Let's get out of here. But like, fake epic feel sort of thing that they try to do sometimes with these mm-hmm. early NXT TV big matches, so to speak. But I thought they really went for it and kind of went for broke here. It told a better story. It's continuing that story, but did it more effectively than I think that they did at TakeOver. And that Neville really just blows through all of Tyson's offense, like takes all of his best shots. He escapes the sharpshooter. Like, he even kicks out of that blockbuster at one point. Sort of leads Tyson into resorting to some outside interference. You know, he tries to get the chair. Natty stops him. So that's continuing their little domestic spat, whatever that's leading to. But that's sort of that moment where he snaps and he's getting that edge maybe that his character needs. And of course, Neville survives that as well and manages to hit a sick red arrow, more so than usual. Like, he the impact on that caused his body to bounce and flip into the cover, which looked so awesome.
It did.
Mind you, I'm a bit of a moves pervert, so this match gave me a lot to enjoy. I thought it had a hot finish. It sucked me in as it went along, and I got pulled into that drama, especially towards the end. I think this is one of the better matches we've seen so far in NXT. It's one of those, it benefits from being watched in a vacuum, I think. Like, take out all the surrounding. We know Tyson as a character sucks. We know this feud kind of sucks. But just watch it as a match, and it's like, oh, shit. Kind of a hidden gem here for my money. Yeah. So, fuck it. I went 3.75.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
I started to knock off like a quarter star, just, I don't know, to get more in
line. Out of embarrassment.
Yeah, no, I will stand behind this one. I still think Tyson as a character needs some work, but just as a match, I fuck with this. I really do.
Well, if you fuck with it in any way, I think it's just on Neville, because he was
good. Oh, sure. He's outstanding in really this. Good. Yeah. Oh, you get that. So I got some textbook NXT overindulgence as well, because there's that Phantom 3 count at one point with Neville's foot being on the ropes. The ref doesn't see it until the three goes down. The hand goes down for three and catches himself. I love that kind of shit. So I don't care. I was into it. Now, I would employ our listeners, hypothetical and otherwise, to watch this match. Don't even watch any of the, maybe watch the TakeOver match and then watch this. Just watch them back to back and see how you feel about them.
Yeah. I'm almost interested to rewatch it and try and separate all the, like you said, and try and think of it more in a vacuum and just really watch the match. Cause it could, like, I wonder if my opinion is being affected, which, I mean, I think it's okay for your opinion to be affected, like that the crowd's kind of dead. Mm-hmm. We know that they've kind of run this match back out with, for really no, you know, not much of a good reason. Maybe if I could separate all that, I would probably elevate it a little bit. Like Jenny said, I think it's like Tyson for one. I think he kind of peaks out for me at a certain point, but
it's interesting. It's so bad when your character work takes away from what you do in the ring.
Yeah, and
because you're right. I mean, I'm watching it right now while we're talking about it, and I feel like he looks a little bit better than I remember, but I think all of the stuff that we've already done, yeah, sort of the character takes away some of my enjoyment. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's fine because I'm not one of those people who really advocates for watching matches in a vacuum. I do think that a match should be, you know, the sum of its parts. And the reality is the story, the feud, the character of Tyson Kidd particularly has been kind of so blah that it like poisoned the well going in. It's already conditioned you, like, no matter how good this match was, I could totally see an argument for it just never was going to get out of second gear or whatever, because I was already conditioned to not give a shit about it.
Well, it feels like a pity match too.
But I don't know. I thought that as it went along, I thought it managed to overcome some of these trappings, which is rare. I mean, I think maybe I gave it credit. I rewarded it for that. Cause that's hard to do. Like, when I don't care about a match, super don't care about a match, but it won me over.
Some very in-depth wrestling talk. How about that? How you like that, hypothetical listener?
We don't do that on this show.
We actually do a lot for us.
Every moment.
But let's get to what we thought, because that wraps up the episode. Overall, Jenny, what would you give this episode of NXT? I know you mentioned that this is probably this one's a little rough for you.
I have 3 1-star matches and 1 2.25-star match. And the commentary is trash. I got to go 3 again.
Boy, definition of a one-match show. I'm looking at this. In my other star ratings, it's like I have one of the best matches by my ratings that we've seen to date in NXT, and then a whole bunch of like in the range of 1-star matches. I guess I'll give the show a 4.5 just for that one match, really, because that you have to give it something. It's the WrestleMania 13 of NXT's, basically. It's have to acknowledge its achievement in one area despite its failures up and down the rest of the card.
I'm actually not far behind Tim, and I think it's because I did like the women's match in the opener a little bit more than you guys did, and I wasn't as high as Tim, but I thought the main event was okay enough, and I enjoyed the Bo absurdity.
So yeah, I went
four out of 10 for me. What were you saying about the Bo stuff, Tim?
No, I'm considering. I'm not talking myself into a 5. 4.5 for me. But the Bo stuff is good too. I'm kind of sleeping on that.
Yeah, it was fun. And the absurdity I like on here. But so we have a wide variety of opinions expressed about the show. And we also have a wide variety of content on the Place to Be Nation family of wrestling feeds and shows. First of all, before we talk about the shows, let's make sure you check out the new PTB Wrestling Network store and show off your favorite podcast logo on great merchandise. We have a shirt, PTB NXT shirt, you can check out. T-shirts, hoodies, and more. Just go to www.tpublic.com and type PTBW in the search and check out all the sweet merch. It's some pretty cool merch. I have a few, not for my own show, but I have some other stuff. But it's good stuff, high quality.
What are you doing? Why don't you buy your own merch? That's the first thing I did was my own merch.
I'm a selfless lover.
That senior video mug is pretty swank.
Yeah,
the PTB NXT mug is pretty swank.
It is.
Yes, great.
You never have enough mugs, though.
Correct. Never. Wrestling Chicken Salad returns. This time, Ben Locke and the guys go to Detroit to try and fix the bad from Survivor Series 1999. On the newest NWA Saturday special, Scott and the Doctor discuss episode number 8 of UWN Primetime Live and look ahead to episode number 8. Sorry, that threw me off. Look ahead to episode number 8. That doesn't seem right. And went on to some other tangents of note. Talking WCW is back with our very own Tim Capel and Jennifer Smith, along with Greg Phillips. They return, and this time they fire up the smoking mask to discuss matches with the man they call Vader. I started that one today. I'm going to finish it soon enough. I love Vader. WCW Vader's just chef kiss.
Yes.
Right.
Chef kiss to WCW. Vader. On episode 562 of the Place to Be podcast, Scott and JT are with Peter Winson as they relive the 427-91 episode of Saturday Night's Main Event. On a newest senior video, Roy McNamara is joined by his special relations mates to live watch the best of the British Bulldog. Very on brand pick for them, I would say. Fits the gimmick. Please rate, review, and subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music. Just search the Place to Be Wrestling Network. Check out the Place to Be Nation Pop feed with some great shows that include The Ear and Pop, Laughing Theater, The Great Debate, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action with our boy Matt Souza, Making Mount Rushmore, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. I know. I felt like I was on a roll and then I fucked it up. Subscribe to it. And while you're at it, subscribe to a pair of tremendous podcast feeds. First, Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position is the home of Geek and Tassie, Talking Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and more. Also, check out the North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rizzo and Chad Campbell and Aaron George. It's the official home of Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Lund Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, Shrink Wrapped, and much more. And also join our rejuvenated, revitalized Place to Be Nation discussion group on Facebook. Go to Facebook, look up Place to Be, and request an invite. Discussions and fun with wrestling, movies, tournaments, and all forms of pop culture. We're coming down to the home stretch of our 2020 stretch project, which is the greatest WCW match ever. You have until New Year's Eve to do research, promote matches, and build your lists. Tim, are you going to go down to the wire like he did for the...
I was just thinking about it and having like PTSD flashbacks, hoping that GWCW goes a little bit better for me than GWWE did. These projects, they're really draining. They're a complete fucking nightmare, but please join us, because it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to participate and compare notes and talk about and watch these matches. You have a real love-hate relationship with it, I feel like.
All right.
But you have to participate in order to know.
If you want a nightmarish amount of stress, participate in the GWCW project.
Yeah, I think that I did good as my hard sell for that.
2020 hasn't been enough for you yet. Try this.
Conversation rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. Be sure to check out placemediation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes, bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. If you're doing online shopping from Amazon, be sure to click on the banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage or use placetobenation.com/Amazon. Takes you right to Amazon, helps you help us at PTBN with no cost to you. While you're there, pick up a copy of longtime listener Adrian Cotton's, not Adrian Neville, but Adrian Cotton's second book, AWO Big Time Players Episode 2, Continuing to Grow. It's a vivid description of the second episode of Alpha Wrestling Organization's program, Big Time Players, and it's available as an ebook and a paperback. You can get both episodes 1 and 2 in paperback form for $15.98. Continuing to grow. Wow. Stuck with me.
Excellent.
All right. So check out all that wonderful content. And we will dive into our last episode of NXT TV, and we'll see if we can bring this home, because it's been a little bit of a rough go, I would say, overall. Besides Tim's loving that main event that we just talked about, it has been pretty tough sledding through these first two. I think probably one of the weaker runs we've been through since we started the pod. So let's see if they can redeem themselves with the June 19th, 2014 episode of NXT. And we're at a good start because we at least have our A-team back on commentary. So at least know that's going to be solid. And we can count on some good William Regal gems along the way. We start with a match with Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss, which was established on our last episode when Alexa challenged her. We have a Lucha-esque start with lots of flipping and rolling. Sasha even locks in a surfboard that I thought looked pretty cool. But due to some Summer in Charlotte drama that's going on, Sasha gets distracted and then she gets rolled up. This did really not – the rating for this one to me is nothing against the match itself. It just literally didn't have time to do much of anything besides the few things I just said. I went a half star on it because it really just didn't get a chance to cook. It was much more about the angle with Summer and Charlotte causing sort of a distraction for Sasha. So we get more BFF drama. Thoughts on the BFFs and their continued turmoil?
I mean, I think we've said our piece on this one. Like, at least we saw the explosion of the BFF powers, I guess you could call it, as they erupted, like, fighting up the ramp and just bitching at each other and screaming. And it's like, all right, clearly we're putting this thing to rest. So, I don't know. As Jenny said, it'd be better if they just didn't do it at all, but at least for the fact that it exists, I guess they're going about it the right way.
What did you rate it?
The match itself, I actually gave a star. I thought that Alexa and Sasha like showed a glimmer of having some chemistry. I kind of liked the... just the trash talk between the two of them at the start of the match. I like Sasha's sort of mocking Alexa, who isn't like established as much of a character at this point, but you know, she looked pretty decent for what this match was, which I mean was no great shakes, but it just felt like there was some potential here. They did have like one blown spot that was pretty, you know, obvious in telling, but they for the most part kept it together and had some decent exchanges.
I would agree with you about the little glimmers here and there. I think that I'm used to seeing both of these ladies work with women that are a lot bigger than them, and they are pretty evenly matched as far as size wise, which is very small. So I think that is the glimmer that we're looking at, because I just think it's easier for them to work with each other because they're the same size. And they're pretty equally, well, I mean, Alexa's got some work to do, but as far, you know, moveset wise and whatever, fairly equally matched. So I gave it a star as well. It was okay in the ring.
Yeah. I'm surprised we haven't seen more matches or even like a proper feud between Sasha and Alexa just in the time since this, with them becoming more you know, mature wrestlers.
Usually you don't see them together.
It's weird.
Paired with each other.
Yeah, it's weird that they've kept them separated, because they've done like every other combination just about of these women. I don't know. I'd like to see Alexa get thrown into the mix more with the horsewomen, as it were.
Yeah, this is, like you're saying that, Tim, I was just thinking about it. Like, she's sort of been one of the more interesting parts of this. Not necessarily, like, watching her matches, and she doesn't like she gets a lot of matches. But just seeing since she debuted, I'm interested to see, like, where she goes, because she is obviously, like, huge in WWE on the main roster now, and definitely in their top, you know, few women as far as, you know, her exposure and how they push her and everything. And she, I feel like, is a little bit left out of the Four Horsewomen and that whole sort of thing, but she's around here at the same time. So I'm just interested to see, like, where her NXT run goes, to see, you know, maybe why is she not lumped in with them. So it's just something interesting, just from a, you know, how did she get where she is today sort of thing. And that's probably the most compelling thing about what we just watched, is just, but we continue on to more of the squabble between Tyson Kidd and Natty. He says that she cost him the match. She didn't want him to cheat because she didn't want him to stoop that low. And he is upset because apparently she asked JBL for a tag title shot for him or something like that. So he's upset about that. Yes. So he's upset about that. So more strife between the
What did you guys think about Natty running to JBL to ask to pair him with Sammy and put him in a fucking tag team title match?
It's just continuing that, oh, Tyson is Natty's husband type of thing. And the strange conversation they were having on commentary about gender roles and whatnot. Mm. Like, I think they think they're doing something pseudo sophisticated here, and it's just like not landing, you know.
No,
maybe that's it.
He's like, if I'm gonna beg for a title shot, I'm gonna do it myself. Damn it,
I'll do my own fucking begging. Yeah.
That's his old.
I'll angle. Need my woman to do it for me. I go beg myself to be paired up with someone more talented.
He was like, "This is what I do." She was like, "Yeah, this is what I do too." Also, my uncle's Bret Hart, so fuck you.
Yeah, I just think, too, I think, like Tim said, they're trying to go for some sophisticated. I don't know if these are two people, like, you know, on the mic that can pull off something. Yeah, you know, like, and I mean, it's not really that much of a dig on them. I mean, I think there's probably not a whole lot of people in wrestling that could pull it off, because it's just not really what usually happens in wrestling. It's not really what wrestlers are made to do. So, but in a cool moment, we get, I guess, kind of a debut, in that officially we see that Aiden has paired up with the guy that he met a few episodes ago, and they're going to be dubbed the Vaudevillains. And in a promo, it's in black and white with kind of out of sync voices, like it's clear to be like an old time, like, I guess, like a silent film sort of thing. So they're already establishing that that's going to be their aesthetic. What did y'all think? What are your first impressions of the Vaudevillains in this promo?
I kind of like it. I like the black and white. I like how over the top it is. I kind of have a soft spot for like that era, just aesthetically. So I'm kind of into this.
It feels a little, I don't know, indie wrestling. Just the gimmick itself is sort of like, what is this? You know, like, does this really have any kind of staying power? Begs the question why. It's just sort of goofy for the sake of being goofy, I guess.
Well, I mean, the real why is we need a tag team division.
So... I don't know. I guess it gives them a hook, which is more than like Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger can say. So having a character is better than not. Having a gimmick is better than not. We're big fans of Aiden, and now he's met a friend who is allegedly as strong as he is silent. And yeah, that's Simon Gotch, who I guess we haven't seen prior to just hooking up with Aiden here.
No.
So I guess I'll reserve the rest of my commentary for the match they're going to have.
All right.
Yeah, I'm kind of both minds on it in that I like that it, like you sort of mentioned, Tim, it's better than just throwing two guys randomly and there's no clear reason why they're together and they don't have like a clear, you know, connection. So I like that they're a team, their gear goes together, they have a, you know, like a cohesive sort of aesthetic to it. Mm-hmm. But like you said, Tim, also, I think it's almost a little bit too over the top at points where it's like, like, I wish they wouldn't make it like they're literally like, mm-hmm. like they're from 1905 or something like that. I wish they would be like kind of how Aiden was, where obviously Aiden was presented a character who's kind of into this classical sort of style and like opera and that sort of stuff. But he still acted like a person living in 2014 who was just mm-hmm. into that stuff. Yeah. And I almost wish they would tone it back to where like they appreciate kind of that whole deal, but they don't present it as like, no, we literally are like in black and white movies and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Like you said, Tim, it's almost a little bit too cartoonish, and I wish they would tone it back a little bit. But I do like that they're a team with like they're clearly partners, they're together. It's not just like two random guys. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping it goes well because I don't remember a ton of, I mean, I remember them as a team, but I don't remember exactly how their run goes. So, but before we get to see them in action, we get to see our old buddy Mojo, who's going to be facing some guy named Garrett Dillon, who apparently is our previous PTB NXT favorite Captain Comic.
Oh, shit.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like the regal. I bring the fun facts, okay?
That just colors my entire view of this match, then.
Me too. Yeah. Why aren't we calling him Garrett Christofferson?
Yeah, this is stupid.
He don't want to have to live in his dad's shadow. Famous wrestling dad. That guy's shadow.
Yes. What's the point of even having Chris Christofferson as your dad? He's not going to live in his shadow.
So Garrett Dillon, yes, he is Chris Christofferson's son. Regal Jody, says that he is Jody Christofferson. Regal says that he is a brawler, so already trying to establish his style. And he says at one point, anyone who wears brown trunks doesn't care what people think.
Yes. Which is amazing.
So as Mojo is known to do, he takes a beating and then does his three moves and ends the match, like always. So poor Garrett gets squashed by Mojo in the end, in the weird kind of Mojo squash where he doesn't really dominate the match. He just comes back at the end and wins. And again, my issue with all these Mojo matches is just kind of, it screws with my head because the way Mojo looks, this is not how to expect him in like a squash kind of match to go, where he's selling like he's, mm-hmm. you know, some underdog babyface kind of guy, but he's like huge. I don't know, but I want a star as I normally do on these.
I thought it was fairly stiff, you know, like it didn't look like our friend Garrett was, you know, holding back much. I felt like he really kind of went for it, for what he was there for. And the hyperdrive continues to suck. Star and a half. Garrett had like a boar or something on the back of his trunks. A pig? What was that?
Probably some college sports thing.
I don't know. I've never seen a logo like that before, ever. A bull or something with horns? I don't know. It was weird.
I just knew they were brown because he doesn't care what people think about him.
Yeah. Yep.
I think I have a different scale of Mojo squash matches than just regular squash matches. It's almost like a inverted broomstick rating where he just sort of can carry what would be a one-star match down to a half-star match, which is what happened here. I gave it half a star. It's bizarre that he doesn't just come out here and dominate, but as you described, Jake, it's like the Mojo formula. He takes a bunch of offense, then makes a shitty comeback and finishes. And it's getting old. Like, I don't like it. It's not impressive. Garrett Dillon, I originally had written down, was like great value Arn Anderson, but then I thought, actually, more great value CW Anderson. Like, he's really scraping the bottom of the barrel. But then I don't want to be too unkind towards our friend Captain Comics. So I feel bad about saying these things now. But anyway, that's where
do
I
you
land.
Think, like, do you think Mojo should just go like full Ultimate Warrior? Like he runs down, does his like hype thing, and almost like he never quits moving. He just runs in the ring, does his three moves like immediately, and like, squashes the guy in 5 seconds. Like I feel like that would be more entertaining.
I do. I just might as well.
And like the crowd would just eat it up. They'd be like, "Yeah, hype!" Like I don't know. It's like I feel like nobody's getting behind him as like an underdog. Like, oh man, is Mojo gonna make his comeback? Like, no. He's his whole thing is like he's hyped. He needs to come in and just like. Be a nut and like destroy people while like smiling about it or something. I don't know.
No sell and just shake the ropes, run guys over, and as he said, just perpetual motion, never stop.
Yeah, and it's possible like the snarky NXT crowd might shit on that, but I was gonna say
or it would end up being heelish. I don't know. They want to keep them, sort of positive and upbeat.
If he got over as a heel doing that, then I would probably just run with it because it's more of an edge than he has now. So, yeah.
That'd be amazing if he was like Bo Dallas, equivalent of like Goldberg, where he just comes in like destroys guys smiling and everybody's booing him. Like, that would be amazing. But
I kind of anyway. Know.
He's like the biggest heel on the roster.
Yeah. Remember when Rusev pushed
him? Remember when he desecrated the honor of America?
Remember when he failed us as a country?
Failed us.
Looking like
shove it right up your Putin. Then he just gets fucking hammered. All right, we go backstage. Sami Zayn is talking to Tyson about how they can redeem themselves tonight, speaking about the tag title match that Natty has lobbied for. And then we get the debut of the Vaudevillains that we talked about earlier, and they're going to be facing Angelo Dawkins. And
We stepped over CJ Parker appearance.
Because...
He's out with a sign. I'm sorry, I didn't catch.
J-O, did we?
Didn't catch this one. But I that's a good one. But Regal wastes no time in calling CJ Parker a dirty, filthy, Charlotte dodging git. And they kind of got on him for that one. Like, apparently that's highly offensive.
Mm-hmm. Goodness.
And then threatened to run over his hybrid vehicle with the giant SUV.
Stupid CJ Parker. Unrelated. We have hurricanes. We've had like 30 hurricanes, and they're still hitting. And it's like almost Thanksgiving. Stupid CJ Parker.
Yes, I'm still running my air conditioner. December, the air just actually cut on in my house to keep it at a cool 70 degrees.
Freaking loser. But we have the Vaudevillains versus Angelo Dawkins, and I do not remember the other.
Write their names down.
That's Tyler. I got
okay,
you.
All I have is Tyler.
Very good. You know, friends help friends.
There we go. So Angelo Dawkins and Travis Tyler, I'm sure is a great man. We get the cool entrance with the black and white for the Vaudevillains. So again, I do like that they have this this cohesive aesthetic to it. And the entrance does look cool with the lighting effects and stuff like that. Aiden does he does like a nice tight like neck breaker leg drop thing. I thought was cool. I do like their offense. It's a little gimmicky, but I don't think they overdo it much, the Vaudevillains. I at least like that it matches their thing, and they do have some signature stuff. Kind of like how we mentioned earlier how Ty Dillinger and Jason Jordan didn't have anything that really stood out. I like that at least the vaudevillains have certain stuff that they do that's theirs, and they're establishing this first match. It's like everything we said about that match earlier, they're doing right in this one. Like, to get over like who they are, what, you know, what's their gimmick, what kind of, how the way they work. They do tons of quick tags and just like decimate the jobbers. They get a nice finish where they do like a they do like a double team finish where they do like a fireman carry and then a senton, which I thought was cool. And overall, I thought this is a really good debut. I want a star on it. I'm almost tempted to bump it up just because I thought it was a really effective debut for a squash match. I'll go a star and a half. I thought it was well done. I thought this was a good way to debut the vaudevillains. Thoughts?
I'm good with a star and a half, too. It was more impressive than your standard squash because it was an effective introduction for a new actual tag team. It was, you know, everything that again, that Jason Jordan, Ty Dillinger, I almost forgot the other guy's name. See, is everything that match and that team was not. Yes, it's kind of irreverent for the sake of being irreverent, but they definitely leaned into it. And I think are getting into their characters, which is fun to see. I wrote down that the vaudevillains use great silent era based offense.
I wrote calisthenics based offense.
Okay, that fits too. That definitely fits. And yeah, impressive. Like they don't really take much in the way of offense, which is good. And I like their little finish. We saw Aiden do something that I don't think we've seen from him, which is that middle rope senton, which a guy that size, such a lithe beauty. jumping off the middle rope, not even the top rope, the middle rope to get the kind of height that he needed to land that senton was pretty cool. So I was happy with this.
I was pretty happy with it too. I think I like their style a little bit more than you guys. They did a good job at cutting off the one guy. I don't know his name, but you know, cutting him off, not letting him tag, you know, working him over pretty good. Bunch of quick tags traded off. So it seems like they have a pretty good, you know, chemistry rapport right off the bat as a team. So I really like that. I thought the senton looked a little goofy. I think it's just because it was Aiden.
Yeah. Because he's so light.
Yeah. Something about his height, and he's very trim. I don't know. It's very
trim,
gangly looking, goofy even. But a star and 3/4 for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The last thing I would say is that it is gimmicky, but it's not like Adam Rose level, like where it's just like goofy for the sake of like, you know, being goofy. They're still they're working it into like stuff that. Like you would normally do in a match, you know, like they're still, you know, like we talked about how they kind of isolate him and tag in to kind of work the guy over and that sort of stuff. So it kind of worked for me. I don't know. I'm impressed. I'm looking forward to seeing more of the vaudevillains, but
silent era based offense is more effective in a match than party based offense. Let's just say
party based. So. Of course they teach you that the first day of a wrestling school,
you would think. And then like 5 people leave because they just know they're not gonna be able to cut it. Shit, all I brought to the game was party based offense.
We get some Fast and Furious promos backstage. First we get Kaz singing That's Amore, because I guess he's still, even though Aiden has moved on, he's still singing. We get a PSA about family again. At least this time it's from somebody who at least does seem like
out of has a shit, family.
Which is
still has a
Roman family. Reigns. But it did throw me off a little bit to see Roman Reigns in jeans. That was a little jarring to see him like in his bootcut jeans. And then we get an RVD interview out of nowhere. RVD is
right
here in NXT. He puts over Neville and says that he wants to wrestle him. So yeah. I could get down with that for sure. Some RVD and Neville action. And then we move on to our next match, which is going to be Tyler Breeze versus Kalisto. Kalisto is without his buddy, El Locale. So,
oh, no.
Shame.
He seems to be dumping him.
Thank God.
So we get lots of Tyler Breeze kind of controlling everything on the mat until Kalisto sort of fires up to make his comeback. The crowd is really into Kalisto here. So he kind of fires up, does some of his cool moves that we've seen in his other appearances, but then Tyler Breeze hits him with the beauty shot and that ends it. I made it seem like it was short, but it really wasn't. I thought it was a fun match. I like Tyler trying to ground Kalisto, and you know, it was basic storytelling, but effective. And both these guys are really talented. Again, trying to ground Kalisto and then, you know, Kalisto firing up for his comeback, but then Tyler still gets the win because he is a little higher on the totem pole, so that made sense. Just kind of a good, solid, you know, middle-of-the-show match, so which we've actually been lacking on some of these. So I went 2.5 on it.
Whoa.
Yeah?
I actually went 2.25 on it. I really did like it. I guess I just am a Kalisto fan. I don't know, but Tyler really had to work hard, I thought, to keep him on the mat. But when Kalisto finally escapes, he really does toss Tyler around pretty well. I thought it was a pretty fun match, and the beauty shot looks pretty good. So the crowd was dead early, but I think got into it. So I like this one, Tim.
I thought I was only going to be out on a limb on one match tonight, because I'm in the opposite direction this time. I thought this match was doo-doo shit. You got me.
Oh, no!
This was so bad. Like, I mean, Breeze doesn't do anything. It's all, like, rest holds for what feels like 20 minutes. I know the match wasn't that long, but he just kept going to, like, that chin lock and that headlock and he's not really even cranking it or working the move. It feels like he's trying to figure out the next thing to do out there. He looks a little lost to me. And I'm like, I had come to expect a lot better from Tyler Breeze. And I mean, yeah, Kalisto gets a couple of hope spots. He hits a couple of his high spots, but I mean, it never got going for me. And when it felt like it was going to pick up, like Breeze just goes back to a front face lock. And again, if you're going to keep it mat based and use that as a strategy to keep Kalisto grounded, I think there are more interesting ways of going about that. And he just kept going back to the same very pedestrian, very boring well that I'm like, Are you just fresh out of a wrestling school here? Like, what are we doing?
I took it like an ego thing. Like, I don't have to do anything but this to beat you. You know what I mean? Like, my headlock is enough to wear you out, enough to pin you in this match. So I just felt like he was only doing what it took to just put Kalisto away.
I guess I could see that as a storyline rationale. It just felt like rest hold porn to me for rest hold perverts.
Not enough moves.
We even get a loud, I don't know if y'all caught this, but from the crowd, somebody goes, "Time to go home, boys. Time to go home." Like really loud. And then it goes like another 5 minutes and you're like, good finish with Kalisto rebounding off the ropes right into that beauty shot. But man, I just thought that it was one of those matches that like got worse as it went along for me. So I ended up with 3/4 of a star.
Wow. Yeah,
I thought this was brutal. As I watched it, I was like, did something happen? Like this is not going well.
Wow. All right. Interesting.
I got Corey Graves flashbacks watching this.
Oh.
Yeah. Some Corey Graves baseball.
No, how dare you, sir?
I don't know. I feel terrible saying it, but
oh, yeah,
that was about the level of offense I was seeing.
that you had to think about that, but something that I'm excited about. So we are confirmed that we are going to get RVD and Neville on the next episode. So that sounds fun. I remember liking this RVD. I mean, I always like RVD, but I actually remember being surprising, like his kind of little comeback run at this point in this kind of era in WWE. I remember being pretty fun, like old man RVD.
Yeah, but I had that written down too, old man RVD.
Fun stuff. And so we go to our main event, the one that Natalya begged for the NXT Tag Team Championship. It's going to be the Ascension versus Sammy and Tyson Kidd. So we start off, and so really the whole crux of this match, or the most of what the actual match was, is Sammy gets isolated. And they continue building that Tyson Kidd is getting pissed off because he's not getting tagged in. And he thinks that Sammy is being kind of a show off or being selfish. And so the majority of the match is just the Ascension being the shit out of Sammy, as the Ascension are pretty good at. And Sammy's really good at selling. So that worked. And he eventually gets pissed off and walks off. And so Tyson Kidd walks off and they hit Sammy with the Fall of Man. And that ends it. And so I think it was, you know, more of a to build a story than a match. But I thought for what they did and what the story was, it made sense. And like I said, Sammy's super good at selling. And that was pretty much what was happening in this match. And the Ascension, for how much we've criticized them, can beat the shit out of somebody. And so I thought it worked. We'll talk about the storyline. But as a match, I went 2 stars on it.
I'm afraid to
Tim's about to give us -3 or like 4.5.
I don't have
a 5-star match right here.
I don't have a hot take on this one. I just added it as a star because I thought
it's hard to rate. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, because it's more storyline than match, really. By design, and that's okay. It does show us a side of the Ascension where they are having to step it up against some guys who can actually go. But I like that they utilize those quick tags to keep their advantage. Mm-hmm. Fall of Man looked pretty impressive. Sammy taking that move. So yeah, it is what it is. I'm not going to knock it. I'm not going to ding it, but so much.
Well, I mean, fuck, man, like, I just feel bad for Sammy. Number one, he gets his fucking ass beat by the Ascension. And he gets thrown into this match with this rando guy. Well, I guess they've been partners before. I don't know. I think they alluded to that on commentary. Maybe I'm thinking about somebody else. But, you know, it's like, why am I tagging with this guy? Get my ass beat, and he walks off. And I fucking lost another match. You know, I'm like, what are we doing? All of this for some lame ass Tyson fucking storyline?
You don't like sacrificing Sammy for
I don't. Yeah. I really like why. Yeah. I don't get it. The Ascension got to do a little bit more than they normally do, I think, with Sammy, but he couldn't give them much of a fight there. So 2 stars. Tyson looks like a little bitch, and I hope Sammy kicks his ass.
Okay.
Yeah, because we would agree that it definitely seems like that's where we're going with this, that we're pivoting Tyson Kidd. He's kind of done with Neville, and now he's being positioned with Sammy. Are we excited about this? Are we disappointed? Yeah.
I will be excited if Sammy kicks his ass. Anything other than that, I'd have no interest in.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was kind of blown away by that Tyson-Neville rematch. So I suppose by that logic, you know, miracles are possible. if anyone can drag a decent match out of a lackluster storyline, you'd think it's Sami Zayn. So put him up against Tyson. Yeah, I feeling the way I do about, again, that rematch with Tyson and Neville makes me feel pretty optimistic about this other combination. So I'm for it.
Yeah, I think it's, I kind of agree with Jenny. I feel like it's okay, but put him in there. I think let Sammy beat him, and I feel like we've had enough of Tyson Kidd in NXT. Yeah. I don't know if it's really, I feel like he's taking up a lot of air, and he's not compelling enough to be, like, I'm so much more interested in all the real, quote-unquote, NXT people.
Real NXT people. Yeah. Wow, having real matches. Huh?
Hashtag real NXT. Hashtag no main roster. Hashtag make Paige defend the title. But anyway.
Put the title back.
All right, so this episode two. So I think this is my... Because I did not quite think the Breeze Kalisto match was due to shit like Tim, I went 5 out of 10. This is probably the best of the three for me, even though I didn't think it was great. I think this one definitely gets a bump because I thought the Vaudevillains debut was really good. Definitely had some more storyline stuff going on, I think, than the last two, which is at least building to something. So I gave it a little bump for that. And I thought the main event, even though it wasn't much of a match, I still thought it was pretty good watching Sammy sell for the Ascension. So I went 5 out of 10. But you still get the sense, through all three of these, this one included, I still don't feel like we're really coming back up after TakeOver. I still feel like we're definitely in kind of a lull right now.
Yeah, I'm with you there on the 5 out of 10. I mean, I liked Tyler's match. Vaudevillians, like you said, was fun. We didn't talk about it. There was god awful Road to Paloma ad, which is a movie Jason Momoa, and I was like transfixed by this ad, and I was like, what?
I could not
tell if it was a 2014 ad that went with the original episode or if it was a new ad that got put in.
Same.
So, all of that, 5 out of 10.
Wow. All right, hear me out. I'm questioning how bad one of these just weekly shows has to be to get a zero. And this will not get a zero. But the only thing it really has going for it, for me, is that Vaudevillains debut. I really, I guess that Alexa-Sasha, while not much of a match, is interesting, if nothing else. So I'm going to give it a 2. And I'm trying to think if I've given anything else a 2.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, this was... I thought this was the worst of the three we watched. Easily.
So weird. I feel like usually we fairly agree with each other, but lots of dissension here.
Yeah. I think it's lots of dissension. Ascension.
BFFs.
I think, too, a lot of it is just like, I think it's... It shows how weird this batch of shows is, in that the thing we agree on is that they were all pretty lackluster. How lackluster, you know, and which ones we thought were the worst, it kind of varies between us. But overall, I think we still agree that it was definitely, like, I would say this is the worst like three run, like worst batch of shows we've done for sure. Because we
usually
have one show that has like, you know, a killer match, or like a match that we all agree is killer, or something, a good angle, something. So it was definitely weird. You could tell just by the way we're discussing it that we're just lower on this than we normally are. It was kind of weird in that way. And I think maybe that's why we're so inconsistent with it, because we're all kind of baffled a little bit.
I'm finding it especially confounding because the general trend I would agree with. Yeah, bad batch of shows, probably the worst. So great 10 show anniversary for us. but no, to say that, and then for what was for me like a blowaway match, by these TV standards, again, is like that WrestleMania 13 effect, where it's like arguably the best match in company history on one of the worst WrestleManias by a lot of people's, rankings. So, yeah, it's really, I should feel more enthused, you know what I mean? Like, okay, just saw a blowaway match. NXT is really heating up. We've got some direction, and I still am like, I don't know where all this is going. Like, yeah, we've got a great TV match, but what else? So, yeah, I'm a little befuddled here.
Usually these, prep watches is like 3 episodes, and it goes fairly easy, and it's enjoyable, but this one was a little bit rough to get through, but I'm hoping that it's not like a trend that will continue to happen, like these post pay-per-view slumps or whatever, I don't know, but.
The last thing I'll say is that I feel like the thing I'm looking forward to the most is RVD Neville, which is not really like, like a big angle they've been building. It's just like, hey, look, RVD, he's going to show up, which I think is probably not the best, to show what you've been doing on TV. But on that, we'll get to our award. So best match. I think I'm going to go with... I guess I'll go with the Tyson Kidd Neville match, even though it was disappointing to me. It just didn't have a ton of competition.
Well, based on my ratings, I got to go with Callisto and Tyler Breeze.
Jesus.
Oh, y'all are about to have like a Tyson Kidd Natalya.
Yeah,
strife going.
I'm trying to be here for you, Tim.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's clear what my best match is, obviously, so I don't need to elaborate. I just want people to check it out if they haven't seen it.
I might have to rewatch it. Worst match, I'm going to go with the Ty Dillinger, Jason Jordan tag match for the local talents.
The local talents.
Jason Jordan.
I don't know. I have so many one-star matches. It's really hard to narrow it down. But, I really did hate that the six-woman tag or whatever. So we'll go with that.
Yeah, it's, going by star ratings, I have Mojo versus Garrett Dillon as a half a star.
That was bad too.
I think given how much I hated Breeze Callisto, I want to give it to that because I gave it 3/4 of a star. So I think I'm gonna put that as my worst match because you don't expect shit out of a Mojo Rawley match anyway. Mm-hmm. Who cares? But I expected much more from Breeze and Callisto. So that's getting worse for me.
Okay, people that we think are rising, so I'll throw in Vaudevillains for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I agree, Vaudevillains. I would also throw in Callisto.
I would throw in Callisto as well.
Callisto.
I would
anyone
not,
else you want to add?
Let's add Alexa.
Let's add Alexa. That's a
good one. Good one. Alexa can go in. Falling, I'm going to go with Ty Dillinger, Jason Jordan, assorted tag team. And I'm also going to go with Tyson Kidd.
Yes. Also, who was the other person that we hated? Bo, Mr. NXT.
I'm going to go... I think Justin Gabriel is probably falling.
Yes, that's good too.
I hate to say it, but it is what it is. And I'm tempted to put Tyler Breeze given that performance again, but I'm not going to. But I really thought he stunk up the joint. And I'm putting that more on him than Kalisto. Anyway.
All
right. Garrett Dillon has probably fallen too, but wow. I think I'd save him for maybe a different category.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? He has brown trunks. He doesn't care what you think.
Well,
a man in brown trunks could care less about what people think, obviously. MVP, I think I'm just going to go, considering how weird these shows were, I'm just going to go with Neville. Tried and true Neville, I think.
Neville.
Yep.
Yeah.
Easy.
LVP, controversially, I'm going to go with Tyson Kidd, just because obviously there's people worse than Tyson Kidd. So I have to, he's in my best match, but he's somehow my LVP. Like, what is happening? But I think it's just the amount of time and, you know, how much focus is put on him. I feel like it's underwhelming considering how much the time they spend on him in his Natalya stuff and all these matches and stuff. I feel like he's the most featured guy on all these, and he's just kind of disappointing. So
I would add Summer to that as well.
I would add Sylvester LaFour to that as well.
Sylvester LaFour / Marcus Louis.
Yes.
A sort of whatever French jobber. Best moment. Part of me wants to go with the absurd Mr. NXT getting thrown out the building. And the thing. Mm-hmm. I think my best moment is the reveal of the three-wheeled security vehicle. Let's go with that.
I think I can get behind it. Plus, just the meta nature of him pleading to remain a part of NXT and not get demoted to the main roster.
You know, it was really, like, frustrating to, like, sit and watch, you know, like, because it just went on forever. So I guess, like, just that part in particular I would pick, but not all the shit that came before it.
You could always go with Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger's backstage promo.
No, that was all.
Jen's about to get the first ever NA for best moment.
Yeah, there
doesn't exist.
When I finished watching, it was the best moment.
All right. So with that, we wrap up the 10th episode of PTB NXT. Very Some controversial. Very controversial, polarizing batch of episodes here. As we mentioned, we've been mostly positive, I would say, throughout this. And, you know, we've had a few, you know, missteps along the way, but I think we've been overall positive, and now we feel like a little rudderless in NXT. So we'll see what happens. But you guys want to let everybody know what you've been doing? Not podcast wise, just in general, like what you've been doing.
Making a lot.
This is my fifth podcast on the third day of the week here. I have a few more to go, but a couple of those things you can hear eventually will be on my feed. It's called The Jenny Position, and there should be a new Geek and Sassy coming soon, a new Bianca's First Time, and a couple other little things I have in mind. Also, right here on the Placement Nation Wrestling feed, there is an episode of Jenny and the Gems. So we did the best of ECW volumes 1 and 2 from the Hidden Gems section of the network. So that was really fun show to do. And I'll let Tim tell you about talking WCW. And over on the North-South Connection, I have a show called TNA Never Dies. Me and Aaron and JT going through TNA in 2002. Also, we have the Extreme Three-Way Dance, so me and JT and John D'Amato are in the latter part of 1995, so I have seen amazing things in ECW in 1995, and it continues to be my favorite year in wrestling, so listen to all that, and follow me on Twitter at Jenny Position.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. So on this podcast network, Place to Be Nation Wrestling, you can check out the aforementioned Talking WCW, You and Me, Jenny, with Greg. As we said, three matches from WCW career of Vader. They all happen to be from 1993, because we totally planned it that way, I promise. Really fun show. Happy with how that went. If you're a fan of Vader, do get on that one. And on the Jenny position, your podcast network, Jenny, we have a Talking Pop, and it was a Halloween-themed Talking Pop, sort of, because we watched Creepshow 2. Live watch and commentary of that 80s horror anthology film. It was a lot of fun to do. Mm-hmm. And we'll have another episode of Talking Pop for November once we figure out what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how that works. Listen to The Journey Through Infinity on the Jenny position as well. And on the North-South Connection podcast feed, if you're a comics fan, show called Shrinkwrapped, The Psychology of Superheroes, sometimes supervillains. We have scheduled our fourth. God, mm-hmm. I can't believe how many of those we've done already. Fourth episode coming soon on Shrink Wrapped. And should we say who it's going to be? No, let's surprise them. Mm-hmm. Let's keep that close to the vest. But if you're a comics fan, it's an interesting show expressing our artistic, creative sides, if you will. Mm-hmm. And yeah, follow me on Twitter if you would like. I am at Cyke68, CYKE68. I think that should do it.
Very good. I'll just quickly plug on this here feed, the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. I am on a Highway to the Impact Zone with Logan Crossland, and we have a rotating cast of pretty much everybody has watched TNA besides me. So this is my first viewing of TNA and all the glory of TNA starting in 2004 when Impact debuted. And so we're going through that. We recently covered, oh man, pay-per-view number 108, 8 or 9, wow. I forget. But there's only like two left, mercifully, because they can be a bit rough. But it is a lot of fun just to see the highs and lows of TNA. So check that out. But that will wrap us up on this 10th glorious episode. But I will say that despite maybe we had, you know, we're less positive than usual in these shows, we'll continue to do the podcast even for the Uggos. So,
okay. I was going to say, this is our
exclusively for Uggos.
Our 10th and last episode. The hype of doing this shit no more. Yeah. No, sometimes when it's bad, it makes it more entertaining. It's kind of my
ass.
Absolutely.
Gives you more to talk about in some cases.
That's what TNA has taught me, so. But anyway, this has been PTBNXT. See you later. I am so gorgeous.
PTBNXT has left the building.